This is a nutty debate. Debate. Debate.
Hello, Mixed Nut Cases. It's Nuke Joss, and we are here to do a live nutty debate. Hopefully, there will be people in the chat room sending us comments or questions. Otherwise, we'll just have fun on our own. With me today, I have my resident co-host.
Hi, I'm Tech.
And we've got a couple of guests. So first, we've got Aaron from the In the Village, the Prisoner intro cast.
Stations.
And we've got Amber from the former Lavender Lane podcast.
Hello.
And Rosie Summers from All Aboard the Night Bus.
Hi.
All right. And today we're going to be talking about our favorite book adaptations, which there's a lot of. And what do I mean by adaptation? I mean any book that has been transferred to TV, film, audio drama, you name it. So who wants to start?
I'll start.
I knew you did.
Okay. I'm trying to decide if I want to go from the bottom up or the top down, so I'll go oldest to newest. Absolute favorite adaptation from movie to book. Coming up with my criteria was hard, but I had to go with not the one where I enjoyed the movie better than the book. I'd say it's the one where I can enjoy both for different or the same reasons. And for me, it's the 1971 adaptation of a 1964 book, Charlie and the Chocolate Factory, the original. I don't want to see the 2005 version. I'm not that big of a fan of Johnny Depp. He is not ruining my childhood. I am not letting him. I am not seeing it. The 1971 version with Gene Wilder was more than good enough, and the original Roald Dahl book is classic.
Agreed,
yeah. It's way, way better than the new one, by far.
Yeah.
the newer one's slightly more true to the book and the creepy factor, but I agree with Tech. I'm not that big of a fan of Johnny Depp.
It's weird. Johnny Depp can be like really awesome or just no. You know, Dark Shadows and Charlie and the Chocolate Factory is the Johnny Depp I can't watch. And then there's other stuff that is fantastic from him. So it just depends on the kind of creepy he does. So yeah, Charlie and the Chocolate Factory, I think we all can agree that's a fantastic adaptation, and we all agreed that Johnny Depp version is not. So
the hard part of doing an adaptation is that a movie's going to end up being, you know, a film script is what, 100 pages for a 90-minute movie, and a book is 1,000 pages, you know?
Yeah.
Deciding what to cut and what to keep is always so hard, and you usually end up feeling so shortchanged that, oh, how could they cut out that scene? That was my favorite part of the book.
And like Tom Bombadil in Lord of the Rings.
Thank you! Where's Tom Bombadil?
He's in the video game, and he's horrible. He just dances around and shoots things with lightning.
I love him. Well, I guess that counts, by the way.
Mm.
Lord of the Rings counts as an adaptation. Lord of the Rings Online counts as an adaptation.
Yeah. Oh, we're counting that as a book adaptation now?
Well, think about it. If you play the game, you actually have to go through the story, or at least part of it.
Well, you go through the behind-the-scenes story, I guess, because I will fully admit I have a level 100 character on the game.
Awesome.
So, yeah, you do a lot of the behind-the-scenes. All right, so let's try and catch up with the 9. Yeah, that's not going to happen for a while.
So you're basically the Rosencrantz and Guildenstern of Lord of the Rings, right?
Yeah, you're not one of the members of the Fellowship. You're part of a supporting cast that's helping the Fellowship sort of go along where they're going, and you're just sort of hanging off in their shadows or off in the wings, sort of accompanying them as they go along. The best part to that game was all of the little snippets, all the little side things that they tried to add into the game to make the world complete, more than just the combat and the epic story. So one of the things that they've added in is music, and that all of your characters can play musical instruments either by using your keyboard as a keyboard to play the instrument or by loading in MIDI music files and having your character play that music. You could even have multiple characters together form a band and play the music together. And I remember my character was learning to play the harp, and I stood outside one of the inns and loaded the MIDI music file for Stairway to Heaven. And had my character playing Stairway to Heaven outside of the inn. And this one character runs by, stops, turns around, comes back, listens for a second, and then slaps me across the face and sends me a private message that says, no stairway, never, not allowed, no, and then leaves.
That's fantastic. I love it. Yeah. So we have another guest joining us, and now we have Mildred Cady for the upcoming podcast, The Picnic Basket. Hi, Millie.
Hello. Marnin says hi.
Hi, Marnin. All right. So we've already discussed that Charlie and the Chocolate Factory with Gene Wilder is an awesome adaptation. And we brought up Lord of the Rings Online as an adaptation. I actually think I like that adaptation better than the movie.
Of the Lord of the Rings, of the source material.
Yes.
Interesting.
Because, well, one, it includes Tom Bombadil, so.
Ah, there you go.
Lord of the Rings is definitely a hard one for adaptations because it's so freaking long.
Or in the case of The Hobbit, there's too much thrown in extra to fluff it.
I agree. I don't think that they needed to add the Silmarillion stuff to The Hobbit. It's such a great book. I don't understand why they couldn't have just done it that way. Or if they wanted to make two movies, fine. But a trilogy? The reason why The Hobbit is so good is that it's similar to Lord of the Rings, but it's condensed and it's focused on the characters, not this big overarching world. So who's got another nomination for a great book adaptation?
You stole Lord of the Rings right off the bat there, Tech.
Ha! Take that,
you went
podcast.
To the top of the list.
Interview with the Vampire.
Oh.
Particularly when you compare it, how they did the different adaptation between Interview with the Vampire and Queen of the Damned.
Queen of the Damned, I'm trying to remember because I'm not sure if I read that book or not. But was like, well, nothing like the film was nothing like the book, right?
Well, the film was for Queen of the Damned, it was, because when you look at it story wise, Anne Rice definitely took a very different tone when she did Interview with a Vampire, because that was Louise's story. Right. And Louise, a very different type of vampire, a.k.a. whiny little brat, as compared to Lestat. And Queen of the Damned is Lestat's story. And he is loud, and he is brash, and he is unapologetic. And, dude, if nothing else, the soundtrack, they got, like, they had Jonathan Davis from Korn doing stuff for it.
The Queen of the Damned, was that the one with Aaliyah?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
I wasn't a fan of that one. I was a big fan of, and still am, of Interview with the Vampire. I thought it was brilliant, but not a huge Queen of the Damned fan.
Yeah, I definitely liked Interview better. When I first watched it, I wasn't happy with Antonio Banderas playing Armand. And then I read the Armand book, and I liked it better.
Yeah, out of the two, I think Interview's the better adaptation. But I'm just saying that if you did put the two books together, and put the two movies together, there's a similar change in the tone with the two books and the two movies. But yeah, Interview was definitely much better.
I will say that one of the other things that Interview had going for it is they had really good actors. While they may not have looked the part, they could act, and that helped. And the thing that was the clincher for me is Kirsten Dunst as Claudia. If they had just a generic child actor playing that role, it would not have worked at all.
I can't think of any other child actresses at that time who could have pulled it off. And at that point, she was a relative unknown, so that might have helped. Other than Tom Cruise's peroxide job, everything was so spot on. You got the sense of place. You got the sense of who they were, and they didn't sparkle.
Yes. Although maybe in Anne Rice's mind, I definitely criticize her for being far too in love with her characters. Mm.
As I'm reading here, I was trying to think of other child actresses that capture that same sort of can't grow up sort of, or
definitely can do the older than she looks
right
role.
And the only other one that I can think of that even comes close is Natalie Portman in The Professional.
Yes.
And they both came out in 1994, so that seemed to be the magic year.
I think Dakota Fanning, she wasn't around at that point. But
I was about to say, was she born yet?
No, but in her prime, she might have been able to do the role. I will say that we've gotten, and maybe Anna Paquin might have been able to do it as well. We've definitely gotten better child actors lately. I mean, there's still the problem of the horrible sitcom child star, but I think that we've gotten a lot better performances from child actors in the more recent years than back in the 90s and the 80s. Like, it was, you couldn't have done that story in the 80s because you couldn't have found an actress who could play the role.
At least not that young.
Paul York doesn't have a question, but he did want to say that he's enjoying the show so far, and he has so many favorite books to movie adaptations, he can't even think of one. But I've got a good suggestion from the Radical Geek video podcast, which is one off of my list, which is Scott Pilgrim.
Yes.
Oh, yeah.
I still haven't seen it yet, much to the chagrin of my girlfriend.
Oh, it's
oh,
so
you
good.
Have to see it.
It's on the list of things to watch.
And that one, that I'll also say the video game is pretty awesome, too.
The video game is really, really good.
I'm not sure if I'd call it an adaptation or a companion.
Yeah, it's rare. The movie to video game transition is one that is very, very rarely done successfully. And I'd say it's got like a 99% miss rate. But they got all of the... They got all of the things right in transferring, because they went Scott Pilgrim. They went the comic book to the video game, and they totally skipped the movie. So it's got the same art style, all done in like a blocky 8-bit way. All the music is chip-tuned,
yeah. And
it's really, really catchy. The game is great, and it's just
they programmed in glitches.
Oh yeah, they programmed in one entire level that's an entire glitch. just like those great old video games, but they did it in a style of, not only is it like old timey looking, but it's an old timey style of game that you don't even see anymore, which is the everyone let's scroll to the right and beat up the bad guys as they walk to the left.
Yeah. Side scroller. Absolutely. And I loved the movie. I think the movie was fantastic. I mean, they had the right music, they had the right actors. It just had the right feel.
When they beat up the bad guys and they explode into change, and then the characters start exploiting that for bus fare.
Yeah.
By knocking out a bad guy to scoop up the change on the ground.
Pretty easy way to get bus fare.
Yeah, totally.
Exactly.
Now, I'm definitely going to have to agree. Scott Pilgrim is a fantastic adaptation.
So I have to throw out one that's usually pretty, people hate it or love it. I'm a big fan of The Girl with the Dragon Tattoo. I loved all of the books, and I like the U.S. versions better than the Swedish versions of the movie, and most people highly disagree with me, but I thought that the Swedish versions took way too many liberties with the story and completely changed it, whereas the U.S. version stayed more true to the books. So,
haven't seen either of the movies, so I can't chime in much, but I'm very surprised that the U.S. version could be better, because normally if it's something where there's a European version and then it comes to the U.S., the U.S. sucks.
Yeah, agreed.
There are exceptions. The Office is the exception.
The Office.
Yeah.
Yeah. I haven't read the books or watched the movie, so I have nothing to say.
No, I was just about to get around to watching the movies. I've read all the books very recently. But yeah, it's whether you're in the mood for that kind of thing, I guess. They're supposed to be quite good. But...
So Rosie, when you watch it, you'll have to do like a mini review and send it in.
Yeah, I will.
Definitely. Help me out. Tell me if you love it or hate it.
So Aaron, what's one of yours?
I would have to definitely say the Band of Brothers series from Stephen Ambrose's books, mainly because that was one of the first ones. I haven't fully finished reading Stephen Ambrose's book, but it definitely for a good mini series, and it was definitely one of the mini series that I could continue to watch. It's kind of a big thing for any kind of book adaptation is the rewatch value. If I can have the book have rereading value, I want to have reading value.
You broke up a little bit during that, but I think we got the gist of what you were saying, and I agree wholeheartedly. If the book is something that I want to reread, I definitely want the movie to be something that I want to rewatch. I was a big fan of Band of Brothers.
Oh yeah, me too. The brilliance of Band of Brothers was the that new style of of war movie making that, you know, they did with Saving Private Ryan, that they brought to Band of Brothers, that there is so much going on the screen at any one time that you can, it's like an onion of so many layers. You can watch it again a dozen times and catch something new that you didn't see going on in the background, or what this character over here was doing. And it's just, it's so cool to watch.
Agreed. So we've got more suggestions in the Q&A. Shawshank Redemption is the greatest, says Paul York. And I will have to agree, that is a fantastic adaptation. But Paul also mentions that a lot of Stephen King books have been made into awesome films. Mm. Misery, Carrie, The Green Mile, The Body was turned into Stand By Me. You've got
Firestarter.
Firestarter. Yeah. Is that one of his?
Yeah, Firestarter, okay. Yeah.
And then he also mentions The Stand, and I'm sure we've talked about, or people are thinking of It and The Shining and all this other stuff.
Running Man.
Running Man, yeah, that's Stephen King under, what is the?
Richard Bachman.
That's it, Richard Bachman.
Yep. Lawnmower Man.
I will say, though, because Stephen King is so prolific, you're not going to like all of his books, just like you're not going to like all of the movies. But I will say that I thought that Misery and Carrie, Green Mile and Shawshank were really true to their story.
Or which Carrie?
The real one.
Yeah,
Carrie. Original. And to keep it current, they're doing Under the Dome now.
That's true. That's true.
I'm not a fan of that one.
I thought that got canceled.
Did it? It was a mini series, and then they extended it for another season. I don't know if it's been canceled since then.
I'm a cord cutter, so I don't actually know what's on TV.
Yeah, I loved that book. I couldn't put it down, but I hate the TV adaptation.
This is what I've heard from a lot of people.
A lot of Stephen King really does fit more the mini series because so prolific, and most books are really, really, really freaking long. I think about the only one that isn't is Eye of the Dragon, which that would be awesome if someone right could remake it.
Yeah, well, speaking of adaptations being miniseries, which happens to be a big favorite of mine, I know that there is a suggestion that both Rosie and Tech want to talk about a couple of miniseries made. Rosie, you want to tell us about that?
I sort of came to this thinking straight off the bat Harry Potter, and I think the problem with that is that controversially, as you know, even though I do the podcast, I'm not a great fan of those, and I think that it could have been done in a better way, like the Terry Pratchett books have been done that you're talking of, The Hogfather, and I think they've done Going Postal. What was the other one?
Color of Magic.
Yeah.
Yes. With Sean Astin.
And I always feel that they're obviously they're lower budget and longer. So, you know, you manage to get more of the story in there. Harry Potter's more sort of, I guess, style over substance. And that tends to happen with, I don't know, I suppose it's easier to enjoy an adaptation of a book if you're not quite so passionate about the books in the first place, if that makes sense. You know, it's so easy to, you know, if you're really passionate about it, it's so easy to be picky and pick little things out
the Terry Pratchett books are some of my favorite. And I was when the BBC movies the made for TV movies came out, I was so afraid that they were going to butcher this beloved franchise and ruin the name of Terry Pratchett. And I have to say, it's one of the very, very few times in an adaptation where if I close my eye and imagine Discworld and imagine what the characters and the scenes look like based on the descriptions of the author, open my eyes to my television screen, it is exactly what I've pictured. The visual design of Discworld and of the characters, you know, and this is a world which is flat and two-dimensional, supported on the backs of four elephants rotating slowly on the shell of an intergalactic space turtle flying through the cosmos. And they make it look so good. And, you know, you're right, it is a lower budget and it does have, like, tighter camera work and some of the special effects aren't all that, but the chest of sapient pearwood with 100 little feet underneath it is perfect. Death. Oh, God. Death is the most wonderful character ever.
It is.
It is done very, very, very well. Highly worth it. If you have never read the books, what is wrong with you? Read the books. If you haven't watched this series, go find them and watch them. And if you've done both, do it again. It's great.
Absolutely.
The BBC has this thing about doing really decent adaptations and miniseries. I'm now thinking of Neverwhere, Neil Gaiman.
I haven't seen it.
No, sadly.
Oh, find it. It is gorgeous.
I will say for the Discworld's miniseries, though, while it did have a smaller budget, they were able to... You didn't notice it while you were watching it because the actors... I mean, it's obvious that so many of the actors that did the miniseries did it because they loved the source material. I can't imagine that they were paid very well or what they normally would get, you know? Because they had some really good names in there.
Oh, David Jason is fantastic. I think he's been in two of them, hasn't he? He was in The Colour of Magic and The Hogfather, and he's just amazing in everything he does. So, yeah, really enjoyable. But then I do think, I mean, I don't know if it's the same in the US, but certainly in the UK, it's been a long-running thing. I remember they did, it must be in the 90s, they did an adaptation of The Chronicles of Narnia, which was shown sort of just in half-hour episodes every Sunday. It was a tradition, you know, to watch it sort of, you know, and things like The Queen's Nose and things, you know, lots of children's books.
Is this the one from the 80s with the girl who 80s. Plays Lucy and has a lisp?
Yes. And again, I mean, they weren't fantastic, but because they were lower budget, you know, they could stick to the story. They were enjoyable. And I think, yeah, a lot of book adaptations for me, when they've gone on to be a TV series rather than a film, it seems to work out a lot better, or a mini series rather. Yeah, I wish they'd done that with Harry Potter.
Oh, Harry Potter would be great. But I think because when Harry Potter came out, like, that just wasn't a money-making idea at the time. I think now, if Harry Potter were to be put into, were to be adapted, they might actually think about doing a miniseries and turning it into, like, the latest CW show, you know? I mean, I could totally see that happening.
Yeah.
And then they could stretch it out for 10 seasons and no one would care.
Or even an animation.
Oh, yeah.
I've often thought of it. Be good.
Yeah, I think television is really starting to become a competitor with film, and that a lot of people are pushing their ideas and projects to TV for whatever reason, but they're getting bigger names and bigger budgets and really amazing stories. And I'm excited to see what's coming next.
And I think the response to the fact that books are being brought to TV is that now we're seeing that movie houses are making books into two movies or three movies. Harry Potter started it with, Rosie, what's the last book's name?
The Deathly Hallows.
Deathly Hallows. Yeah. Duh, how could I forget that? When they split that into two parts. And then every book did that. Oh, our last movie has to be two parts.
Well, everything now is being pitched as a trilogy.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. The Hunger Games is doing it. I think they open this weekend with the newest one.
Yep.
It's split into two movies.
The thing sometimes is all about the money. It really is, because Mockingjay doesn't really need it.
No.
Agreed. Yeah, I'm curious as to how they're going to do it, because it doesn't need 4 or 6 hours of film.
Yeah, Mockingjay is just the second half of Catching Fire, in my opinion, of the books. Because I feel like the last two books are really one big book.
Yeah, I could see that. And I'm a huge Hunger Games book fan. Yeah. And I actually am a big fan of the first two movies, but I am not excited that they put this into two movies just to get more money for me.
And so, we'll see how it works out.
I haven't read the source material for the Hunger Games, but having watched the first two movies, I'm struck with this feeling of meh. I mean, they're decent movie, like they're popcorn flicks, but there is nothing in these movies that is hitting me over the head telling me, oh my god, read the books.
You're okay not reading them.
Yeah,
I was gonna say, I would go so far to say that I had the same feeling with the books. They were okay, you know, they were a nice read, sort of fairly pleasant in a way, but yeah, not amazing.
Fairly pleasant, and did not want to throw my reading device across the room like I did with Twilight.
Yeah, you know, oh. But I threw reading material across the room for books that I loved. You have no idea how many times I threw a Song of Ice and Fire books across the room. You did what? Toss.
I did it. Yeah, mm. I did it. I eventually came to accept, oh, you're going to die by the end of this chapter. Oh, look, yeah. You die by the end of this chapter.
Well, and everybody dies.
It's like, oh, no. Aria, she's going to get to Jon. No, she's not. Oh, they're so close and Sansa's going to... Nope, not going to happen. That gets me to one of my favorite adaptations, which has been Game of Thrones. Sure, I can nitpick it. Sure, I can point out its faults. But I'm very happy with it. I'm so happy with it. I do a podcast about it. Beyond the Wall, Game of Thrones podcast. Look it up. But I think that it has been one of the truest adaptations that I've seen. Because even when they change certain things, they still keep the spirit. I mean, there's some things that I could go into detail, but I'm not going to. Like when they cast Peter Dinklage as Tyrion, my first thought was, he's way too attractive. But the actor plays the role well.
They got the casting 100% correct. Yeah. Every character in this, all the actors they have chosen are 100% perfect. And even, I remember when this series was about to launch and we were looking at some of their choices, like, Jason Momoa is going to play Khal Drogo? There's no way that's... Oh my God, that works so good.
Exactly. Well, not 100% of the characters. There's a couple we could argue.
Yeah, I'm sure there
Shay
is.
Shay and Yara. Yeah. You mean Asha.
Yes.
Well, she's not Asha. She's Yara. They're different characters.
Well, they rewrote the character, and that's not the actress's fault.
Yeah.
The cast that they have... There are problems with the TV show, being that it is a TV show that should be a movie being made in a TV show's budget. When high fantasy like this, man, if they threw the dump truck of money that Peter Jackson got for Lord of the Rings and they threw it at Game of Thrones, oh, the beauteous, the beautiful thing we would have. But, or the
scenery.
Yes, the scenery. But instead, we get not that. And it's the, you know, there's problems with the costumes, there's problems with some of the locales. They had to cut all of the scenes with the wolves because they didn't have a time to train the dogs properly. Supporting casts are very small. Like some of the big battles are supposed to have thousands of soldiers. You see 30 dudes on a beach hitting a wall with sticks.
It's just that nobody knows math there.
Yeah, that's no, we it's figured the... It out.
Yeah, I think there was that explanation
was that the TV show actually showed the accurate size of the battles, but that everybody just puffed up the numbers because they don't know math in the books.
So I'm a late Game of Thrones fan. I first heard about them when the series was launching and started watching it. And I'm a big fan, like huge fan of, you know, that kind of, you know, theme genre. So I started watching the first few episodes and I was so hooked on how amazing it was that I devoured all the books right away. And now you're waiting
for the next one.
right, which is probably not going to happen in my lifetime, but that's okay. it'll be in my will. Someone will bury me with it. But, you know, coming from that angle where I didn't read the books first, really, and I got into the show first, I don't know. I think it's awesome. Thinking of it, if it had Peter Jackson's budget, is pretty amazing about where it could go. But, and I think a lot of people are in my boat where they started with the series first and then went to the books. So for them, I mean, it got them a lot of new readers, I hope, involved with the series.
I've had very few readers not happy with the books. But I will say that Mimi from A Podcast of Ice and Fire quit the show, I think season 2 or 3, because she just couldn't. But I would say most of the fans that I've talked to who started with the books love the show.
Well, I'm in the other camp because, well, it's the same camp as Mimi, I think, as you just said. I've watched the first series and I haven't read the books, which I'm ashamed of. I should have done that first. But I just couldn't get through the series. It just started to really upset me. And a lot of people have said, read the books instead. You know, you'll appreciate it a lot more.
Well, I will say my baby sister, Betsy, she tried to watch the first episode and couldn't get through the opening scene. And she's like, zombie kid with blue eyes. I lost it. I was done. No, can't watch it. She went and she got the book, though. And she's like, I can read the book. I'm like, wait, how can you read the book if the opening scene is too scary for you. And she's like, because it's fine in words. I'm like, but in words, your imagination is so much worse. And she's like, no, no, it's all good. So she had to read the books before she could watch the series. Now she's read all the books and she's an addict.
Yeah, I'm definitely in the camp of, I started watching it after my friends in college told me about it. And then I was told it was a book series. And I said, what? It's a book series? I must read this. And then I kind of lost interest in the television series. I'm all caught up in the television series, but once I got past where the television series was, I think about season two, and I got all the way done with the book series, and then I watched season three, I kind of lost the television series and thinking, yeah, they're really cutting a lot, and I understand why, but it's still kind of agonizing and painful. And I think this kind of goes with Paul York's question about watching a movie, didn't realize it was a book, and then gone and read said book.
I was actually just going to get to that. Paul York has a question, and he says, you know, have you guys ever watched a movie you didn't realize was a book, and then gone and read said book?
I'll say it.
Yeah.
A movie that I watched and then read the book, Hunt for Red October.
Oh, nice.
That was a book, yeah.
Loved the book so much more. And then after I read that and saw that, so it's a 300-page novel by Tom Clancy set in the 80s, and then afterwards he wrote a 1,000-page book called Red Storm Rising, which is, it was so accurate that it was used at the U.S. Naval Academy as a textbook on how a war with Russia would play out.
Yeah.
And I sat there in the starting blocks in, you know, teenage tech, sitting there waiting for Red Storm Rising, the book, to come out, and it never did. Now he's dead, and the 80s are done, and the Cold War's over, and I'm never going to get my Red Storm Rising movie, which makes me sad.
What do you mean the Cold War's over? He's called Putin.
No. Soviet Union is gone, and whatever little tiff we have with Vladimir Putin and Russia is not the Cold War with Soviet Russia. Trust me.
I will say there is a chance. Give it 20 years when people are nostalgic, and they'll do a period piece.
What, like they did with Red Dawn?
Remake. That's different. That. And they didn't do a period piece. They came up with a different enemy. No.
No, Red Dawn. The Red Dawn to me is a documentary. Like, oh man, as a kid in the Cold War growing up on army bases and then becoming a soldier myself, Red Dawn is it's the fantasy we all have. It's like people who are learning to fly who dream of that day that the stewardess comes out of the cockpit and goes, are there any pilots here who can land this plane? You want to be that superhero dude. Growing up in high school, we all wanted to be Wolverines. We always wanted to be the kids that can beat the Russians because the army guys can't, and we have to show them how it's done out of our pickup trucks. And, oh, yeah. And no. The new one is tripe and doesn't count, does not exist in my head. The original movie was perfect, doesn't need to be played with, and I'll stop ranting.
I will say that there's a lot of movies that I saw and found out were books, and I had to go back and read them. And because of this, there are some that I like them both, but they're completely different. Like, for instance, Practical Magic was an all right TV show. Movie. And then I read the book and I was like, oh my God, this is amazing.
It's a book?
Yes.
Yeah, it's a book.
I feel like that's my reaction to a lot of things. I just found out recently that The Bridge Over the River Kwai was actually a book first. And I was like, how did I not know this?
Yes, how did you not know that? Not only that, Alice Hoffman, who wrote Practical Magic, has written so many books that kind of have, I would call them the same genre. They're set in reality with the idea that there might be magic. The movie Practical Magic says, oh yeah, there's definitely magic. Whereas in the book, it's kind of like, is there? I don't know. But all of her books take place on Long Island. So Amber, you should definitely be reading her books. Her books are fantastic. I haven't read a book of hers that I didn't like. And
adding to my list right now.
Yeah, no, they're fantastic. Another one that happened for me was Girl Interrupted. Had I read that book first, I would have hated the movie. They're so completely different. The only thing they have in common is, it takes place in a hospital.
I'm not 100% sure I would hate the movie had I read the book first, but Perks of Being a Wallflower. I wouldn't say I would hate the movie if I had read the book first, but I would definitely notice what's missing if I had read the book first and then seen the movie.
Mm. Yeah.
But I don't know if I would have hated it, but I would have genuinely be kind of nitpicking, because that book kind of hit a chord with me, at least.
Mm. I haven't read or watched that, but it is on my list. Another one that I'm going to say that had I read the book, I would have hated the movie. Had I read it first, is Starship Troopers, which
Oh, yes.
Is a must read for anyone. It's a fantastic book. I kind of like the movie.
I kind of hate the movie now.
Yeah, reading the book, it changes it.
I have the same reaction to Starship Troopers as the combination of book to movie as I do with Frank Herbert's Dune.
Okay.
And the,
yeah.
Okay.
And the 80s movie. I like them for very different reasons. I actually like the movie of Dune. I know I'm a heretic, but you have to kind of put a very firm wall in between and say, that's the movie, that's the book, they hit similar but different things, and all is good.
Starship Troopers has so little in common with its source material. I mean, the movie stands up on its own as a campy, schlocky popcorn flick that you sort of go to the theater, shut your brain off completely. Please shut your brain off and don't think. And just enjoy yourself, laugh, watch the nude scenes and, you know, bugs that eat people, and then carry on. The book is, I dare say, one of the most important sci-fi books ever written. And, you know, Heinlein wrote it in the 50s as a treatise as to how he thought soldiers of the future would and should be trained to fight, like, intergalactic bad guys. And it's way, way up there on my list of, you know, must-read sci-fi. The movie is nowhere near that important. I mean, are you recently recovering from surgery and have to lay still for a couple of days? Okay, what have you got filling in your 2 to 4 a.m. stretch on Wednesday? You might want to throw Starship Troopers in there in case you wake up. Other than that, it's not that important. Nowhere near as important as the book is.
What I'm curious what Millie thinks about the miniseries of Dune.
I really liked it. It's definitely a much closer adaptation from the book than the Dino Laurentiis movie ever was. To me, it hit a bit more of the political side. And, well, it's where I fell in love with James McAvoy. So I drifted off for a moment in bliss.
Well, that works.
Cute.
So,
he is so cute.
Moving on.
Edge of Tomorrow.
Is that a James Bond?
Wait, that was
no.
a book?
Oh.
It's Edge of Tomorrow, the one recently with Tom Cruise. It's actually a Japanese light novel called All You Need Is Kill.
Right.
They had to change the title in the U.S.
Gee, I wonder why.
Because it's a Japanese light novel, it's got that same fairly terse feel to it as you're reading it that you get with all the reboots in the movie.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a huge number of things that they changed, like names and other references.
They whitewashed it.
Yeah, they definitely whitewashed it.
Because you're talking about Japanese manga, another one of my favorites I'm just going to throw out there is Ghost in the Shell Standalone Complex.
Check. Oh. Mm.
Well, all of Ghost in the Shell is, at various levels, the original movie is such a wonderful adaptation. The Standalone Complex is... Well, because they did it as a TV show, because they had so much more time to explore the various stories and add more to it, they were able to do it. Sadly, because it was made for more of a TV audience, they had to PG it up, and they weren't able to get to some of the R-rated violence that they were able to in the original movie and in the manga. No, Ghost in the Shell is up there on it's up there on the list of, like I said, must watch and must read sci-fi. It's just a little less accessible.
I also think that the Ghost in the Shell, it's very true to the manga, so it works really well. Another movie taken from comics that I thought was really true to the story was The Watchmen.
Oh, yes. Oh, wonderful.
Oh, you need a most page-by-page flip. you can almost page by page flip through the Watchmen while you've got it on your TV screen.
I mean, there are some, there is one piece that they left out completely, and there is one mm-hmm. plot point that is hugely different, but I think that the why they changed it makes more sense, because, you know, aliens are not going to work on the screen in the same way that it works in comics. So for me, The Watchmen is fantastic. I watched the movie first, and then the very next day I got the graphic novel and I tore right through it because it was so good. Now Shane Poole from the Red Dwarf Introcast wants us to talk about James Bond.
I'm going to be showing my age here and saying I've only seen one or two of them. But at the same time, I've never been a huge fan of the James Bond series as a whole, because I just never really got into the spy thriller movie.
I was such a James Bond otaku when I was younger.
I watched almost all of the James Bond movies when I was younger. And then I think I watched one or two of the Pierce Brosnan ones, and nothing after that, sadly.
You haven't seen any of the Daniel Craig?
No, I haven't. Because, you know, even though I always thought that Pierce Brosnan would be the perfect James Bond, I realized that, for me, the time had passed. Again, you're dealing with... The reason why James Bond, those stories worked so well is because of the Cold War. And without the Cold War, it's just not the same. And the only way I really wanted to see James Bond again is, again, if they did a period piece... And they went back to the 80s, and it was the Cold War. Like, really Cold War, not we're coming up with another threat that's like the Cold War. No.
I lost the plot at what they called the sea drill one of the Pierce Brosnan movies, which was a remote-controlled torpedo with a mining bit on the end that they could steer through an enemy ship when it hit the side, and then you could, like, eat its way, and that there's a dude on another boat with a joystick steering the sea drill through the enemy boats. Now, I know that the James Bond flicks are supposed to be campy and hokey and everything blows up, witty one-liner. Carry on with the rest of the film. I get it, but at that point, my suspension of belief ended and I've walked away from the franchise. Well, I'm sorry.
And that just brings another point up is, in the 80s, when you watched James Bond movies, it was all about these gadgets, you know? He had these really mm-hmm. neat gadgets and normal people didn't have them. So when there was like a weather control machine, people didn't say, oh, that's too far. I can't suspend my belief here. But when
oh, look James at that. Bond's got an iPhone.
Yeah, hooray. Exactly. James Bond has gadgets that I have, and then you come up with this fantastic mega machine. I don't believe it, because James Bond doesn't have gadgets that do cool things. I mean, he's got an iPhone that drives his car. I don't care. I could probably program an iPhone to drive my car.
I got an app for that. Hold on.
When we can turn our lights on and off and change the cameras in our house when we're in another country.
And, remote lock it too, yeah.
Yeah, remote lock it, set your DVR, you know, you name it. You can do a million things remotely. James Bond being able to drive his car with his iPhone, it's not that impressive. And so when we get this sea drill, it's just like, where? that doesn't make sense. Meanwhile, had he had really cool gadgets that nobody else had, maybe we would have cared. You know what's a really good movie that most people didn't like but you loved? Hitchhiker's Guide to the...
We can't talk about that one, Nutty, because by your rules, that wasn't a book first. That was radio to book to TV to book to radio to book to movie.
Well, it was radio to book to radio with TV and film adaptations.
There's smatterings more of to book to radio to book to movie to book to radio
I'll
in there.
I'll include it, though. I'll include it because Hitchhikers, the first three series, became a book, and then the last two series were written and then done. So we'll count it.
That's good, because I was going to bring up something that was the TV show first.
I make the rules, so I get to say if it works or not.
Okay.
Fair enough.
But I really liked the Hitchhiker's Guide movie. A lot of people didn't like it because they're like, that's not Hitchhikers. It's like, yeah, it is, because every incarnation of Hitchhikers is different. And you're not going to be able to do the whole series in a movie. So what they did, I was happy.
Oh, God, no.
I think the biggest problem that Hitchhiker's Guide suffered was they were trying not to insult anyone in particular with it. Because I've read through Hitchhiker's Guide, and I can see how they could have easily made someone angry. They tried to go a little too middle ground with it. I enjoyed it. I'm with Tech. I like the Hitchhiker's Guide, particularly the new one.
Oh, yeah.
Is it something I'll watch all the time? No, but I won't mind saying, oh, hey, it's on TV. Let me watch it.
Stephen Fry as the book and Alan Rickman as Marvin. And you know, the rest of the casting, Zoe Deschanel, and even the Encaffeinated One hates me for this, and we've had long, long, long alcohol-fueled debates on Ford Prefect. You know, Mos Def is Ford Prefect. I think he was great.
I think he was perfect.
That's pretty good.
I love Mos Def as Ford Prefect, and Martin Freeman is Arthur Dent. Like, he has that character. He has that character as down pat as he has John Watson.
Yeah, it's true, and I have to say that I didn't mind the movie, and I love Hitchhiker's Guide, but I can't put my finger on it, but I was just sitting here thinking, there's just something about it that just makes me go, it's all right, it's very beige. I've watched it a few times, and I think I've fallen asleep every time, and I really want to enjoy it, but so far...
Nutty, you've always said this about the movie, that it's less of a standalone movie than it is like a companion or a really good joke based on the source material for the fans.
Agreed. I like the term companion. I think I'm going to start using it more often now.
If you're not a fan of the source material and you're coming onto the franchise fresh... I think we can all agree we don't recommend the movie as a place to start.
No.
Start with the first book or with the radio play. Please start with the radio play.
Oh, the radio play is so good.
I mean, come on. They got the Eagles doing the theme song. How cool is that?
And it's all available for free download. It's public domain, Creative Commons, something like that. The BBC has released it and anybody can get it. It's fantastic. Ooh.
And in the later series, they get Christian Slater as a guest voice. I mean, how cool is that?
I know. It's just like Star Trek VI. It's amazing. So
we have a lot of books that are better than the movie.
We do, because we've been picking out the really good stuff. And that's the whole point. We're talking about our favorite stuff. In the chat, people are saying that they liked Jurassic Park better than the book. I never read the book. I remember liking the movie. I didn't watch the sequels because not worth it. But I'm afraid to watch that movie again because I think it will be very dated.
Yes, it definitely is. I've gone back and watched it a couple of times, and I kind of sit there and think, yes, I can tell it's dated, and it doesn't exactly age very well. Some films might. It's still enjoyable to me, and maybe that's because I'm 22 when I first saw it when I was like 15. But it's definitely aged and not necessarily very well.
Yeah, I do remember when my nephew watched it several years ago. He was like 7, and he watches it, and he's like, "Papa, why do they keep calling it Jurassic Park? It's the wrong period. Jurassic dinosaurs." And that's just the beginning of the bad science in that movie.
You would think a doctor who is an expert in his field would know that amphibians can change sex if there's an absence. That's the biggest plot hole.
Agreed. So one of the other adaptations that I needed to mention, and we touched on it briefly, is the BBC show Sherlock. There have been many adaptations of Sherlock. I'm a big fan of the radio dramas, even though it distorts John Watson's character. But I really like the BBC series Sherlock with Martin Freeman and Benedict Cumberbatch. I think that that's really good, and it's an adaptation that is very different, but I feel like it keeps the spirit. I think Rosie doesn't agree with me.
I'm going to put that into the same category as the other things. Yes, I'm completely cutting you off, Rosie. Take it.
No, it's fine.
I'm going to put this into the same category as Starship Troopers. It is so different than the original source material that the two stand on their own independently. And I can enjoy, you know, the books of Arthur Conan Doyle in one hand, and I can enjoy the Sherlock series in the other, and... never the two shall meet. There's a firm wall between the two.
Yeah, I was going to absolutely agree with you there. Doing an adaptation like that when they're completely different entities is, you know, seems to work well if it's done well. And you're right, there's been so many. I mean, like, what's it called? The Disney film, Basil the Great Mouse Detective.
The Great Mouse Detective, which is a must watch for any Sherlockian.
Another one that the BBC did in the same manner of an adaptation where they took a source material and moved it into current day and did a really incredible job with it was Hyde. They did Jekyll and Hyde.
Hyde,
H-Y-D-E. A-D-E, yep. That's why I went, oh, wait, Jekyll and Hyde.
Well, I don't think I've seen that, but I'm sure it's much better than the Julia Roberts movie.
Yes, I think it's on at least U.S. Netflix, so hopefully you can get it on Canadian Netflix.
Well, I'll have to look into that because Canadian Netflix is very good at getting BBC programs. So
there's one that I don't know if anyone will know. It's actually a book I hated and loved the film. It's a sci-fi. It's post-apocalyptic. It's a book called The Postman. And it was made into a movie in 97. I hated the book. I thought the book was very Dickens-ish, where, you know, Dickens got paid by the word, so there'd be 20,000 pages about Marley being dead as a doornail. And so I felt like The Postman kind of did that. It was just drawn out way too long, and I couldn't stand it. But I thought the movie cut all that part out that I hated and just got down to the essence of the book, and I thought it was a beautiful job, even though it had Kevin Costner.
I will have to watch it. It's one of those, I didn't watch it because it was during very bad Kevin Costner roles. I do think that Kevin Costner is a good actor, and there have been times that he can carry a film, but I think he works best as a supporting character. One of the movies that he did that was really good after doing a bunch of stinkers is called The War. And that has, that little kid from American Gothic and Sling Blade in it. Anyway, fantastic movie.
Yes, I know what you're talking about.
Fantastic movie, definitely worth it. I will have to put The Postman on my viewing queue. Shane is asking us, what about Batman? I don't think there's ever been an adaptation that has done Batman. Well, no, I lied. There is. Of course there is. There's one adaptation for Batman that I will say is a fantastic adaptation, and that's Batman the Animated Series.
Okay.
All right.
The one that came out in the
90s. I could see that. I enjoyed the Michael Keaton Batman. I really did like the first Christian Bale Batman, but then again, I am such a fan of Batman Year One.
I think there have been a lot of good Batman projects, but not many of them are really true adaptations for me. Whereas the animated series, I think, sticks closest to canon and is the only one to influence canon by giving us Harley Quinn.
And if you guys haven't played the Arkham series of games, they are fantastic adaptations of the source material, except in the fact that it feels like they tried to shoehorn too many characters in, so it plays more like a highlight reel than it does anything. But they have a fantastic standalone story with massive consequences, and they are canon in their own Arkham universe. But they got all of the voice actors from the animated series, including Kevin Conroy and Mark Hamill, to come back and do the voices one last time for this TV show. Sorry, for this video game. And the three of them are very high on my video game shelf, and I play through them again and again and again. They are very, very good.
That might actually get me to try a platform game again.
Absolutely. It is well worth the the difficulty is not bad.
Whatever you set it to.
Yeah, the difficulty is whatever you set it to. It is accessible, and the beauty of it is that they hide things all over the game for you to find little snippets. And even the second game had an Easter egg. The game's 3 years old. They just discovered the Easter egg a couple days ago that they've been hiding things in the game. The character Calendar Man is there in his cell, and if you go talk to him on certain days, like Christmas, New Year's, Labor Day, April Fool's, and you go and talk to him, he'll have special lines.
That's awesome.
Oh, that's awesome.
I now need to go do this.
You can do it. You can do it really quick by resetting the clock on your console to be the day that you want, and then you go and talk to him and he spouts the little line. But it was somebody that was trying various days that were important to the to BioWare, the company that made the game. So he set his clock to 10 years ago, to 2004, the founding day of this company. And when you do that, he's got this whole sort of creepy line about, oh, on this day of days, you've come to see where we've begun and where we're going. It is really, really cool.
That's brilliant.
Oh, that's awesome. Awesome.
Okay, so we're going to wrap this up soon, but first we're going to have two rapid fire rounds. First one is we're all just going to throw out other really good adaptations that we like and not go into full descriptions, but people will have the opportunity to say yes or no. So let's go. Rapid fire round. Good adaptations.
Gone with the Wind.
Gone with the Wind. Service.
Little Women. Agatha Christie.
Ooh, Little Women. Survey says number one. Ding, ding, ding.
Not seen.
It's quite good, and the I love the book, but we're not discussing it. We're just moving on.
Agatha Christie.
Agatha Christie. And that was like a whole series, wasn't it?
Mm, yeah, it's a really good TV series. So.
Handmaid's Tale.
I didn't watch the movie, so all right.
Sort of a textbook on how to do dystopia.
I can't discuss, move on.
Little House on the Prairie is fairly decent.
Yeah, Little House on the Prairie. How about Anne of Green Gables?
Not soon.
Okay. I haven't read the book yet, but it's making me want to read the book, The 100. I'm really enjoying that series.
The Walking Dead.
The Walking Dead.
Oh, okay.
Yes.
My cheaty one is Red Dwarf, because I know that's a...
Reverse.
That's based on the book.
They exist together.
Yes, they do. All right.
The entire Hannibal Lecter line.
Oh yes. Yes and no. I like parts of it. I like Hannibal the series, and I like Silence of the Lambs.
Apocalypse.
This is the rapid fire round. So
Apocalypse Now. Okay, end of rapid fire round. We're going to rapidly go through. And this is in response to the Radical Geek video podcast, stories that you would like to see adapted. One story he really wants to see on TV is The Traitor Tales by Nathan Lowell. I think that could make a really nice drama. That would be like a good, cable drama, I think. Not like HBO, but like TNT or USA or something like that. I think that would be really good. Or maybe even CW. I mean, it's not about teens, but I think it could work.
I want to see Ghost in the Shell done properly with a big movie budget, but not with Scarlett Johansson or whatever hot, cute actress is on the, you know, on people's screens today, because Motoko Kusanagi is Japanese.
Agreed.
Start there and move up.
Agreed. There has been an adaptation, but I want to see it in movie form, Wonder Woman.
Yes.
Oh?
Done in this new style of a comic book movie, which, you know, let's throw dump trucks of money at the screen and make trilogies where you're all going to go watch them. Do that with Wonder Woman, and I'll reserve my tickets now.
That's slated for 2017, actually.
Yeah, we'll see if it actually happens.
That's true.
They've promised this to me before.
My wife is waiting for that, too. Mm. All she wants.
Any other adaptations?
I haven't read the book in a long time, but for anybody watching the video feed, I'm going to hold it up. It was a book I read back in high school called Fallen Angels, and Ooh. It was a Vietnam-era book that I really enjoyed. I haven't had the chance to go back and read it and see if it holds up still, but as a high schooler, middle schooler, I really enjoyed it, and I kind of want to see it into a film from what I remember.
Mm. I did get my wish with Game of Thrones, because there were years that I was talking about that and playing the casting game with that. But I'm going to go with The Radical Geek and talk about lesser-known authors. One series that I have wanted to see is some of Scott Sigler's stuff. GFL, Ancestor, or Nocturnal. Nocturnal could make an awesome CW show, I think.
He's created a wonderful world that needs, like I've said before, but there's other people, he needs a dump truck of money thrown at him.
And
a
dump truck of money.
Oh, yes. And his worlds would make great film adaptations. Certainly a lot worse have been made into movies and been successful. Oh, so yes. I think Scott deserves the limelight. They need to stop optioning his scripts and start actually doing something with them.
Agreed.
Ministry of Peculiar Occurrences.
Yes. I've played the casting game with that many times.
That so needs to be on screen somehow.
It would be very pretty.
Only if there's a certain Venetian plague doctor sort of schlepping around. That is just a shameless self-plug, but we can move on.
Hey, I can play my own corpse.
I would like to see any of the Alice Hoffman books done well as an adaptation, but I would fear them making more practical magics.
I'd like to see any of the Weepy Bat books. I don't know if anybody's read those by Francesca Lea Black. And I would also really like to see The Night Circus. It's a book from a couple years ago. I loved the book. Would love to see them put that to imagery.
Good Omens done as a live action movie.
I just thought of something, and that's not part of the rapid round, but I have to mention it. Does Supernatural count if in the series they are a series of books? Does that count as the most accurate?
I think that makes it too meta.
You just want to talk about Supernatural. That's what it is.
Well, it's
your show. You make the rules.
That's true. I do make the rules, but no. I did just finish season 9, so I am a little Supernatural on the brain.
Although speaking of something that does a meta version of itself, Princess Bride.
Yes.
Have you actually read the book?
No, it's a kissing book. Why would I want to read that?
the book is, well, okay, this is not like in response to the question, but the book is so beautiful. And there's all these little footnotes of like history bits about the Cliffs of Insanity and talking about wardrobes. And it's fantastic and just as thirsty, but in a different direction as the movie.
That does make me want to see or rather read the book. But Millie, for some reason, Silly Rabbit segues are for kids, but that does make me think, I would like to see the Metamore City TV show, but that has to be a TV show.
Yes. Oh God. Okay. Yeah.
Without even going through all of the stuff that he's put, they could create new stories and just continue. This is Chris Lester's project, Metamore City. There have been other authors that have worked on it, but it's just a really neat, like, it's kind of like Shadowrun. That's how I explain it, because that's what got me to listen to it in the first place. If you like Shadowrun, it's like Shadowrun, but without the actual games.
Yeah.
It even has dragons. That's what we would like to see in adaptations. What are your favorite book adaptations? What are your favorite books that you want to see adapted? Please let us know. And you can do that by calling 347-NUTTY42 and leaving a voicemail. Or you can come to the Facebook group, facebook.com/group/NuttyBytes. Or you can email me at nuttybytes@nimlast.org. Or just leave a comment on the blog at nimlast.org. That's NIMLAS.org. So please let us know what your favorites are, what you need to see. And I have been joined, as always, by...
I'm Tech.
And my special guests, Aaron, why don't you tell the fine folks at home where they can find you on the internet and your projects?
Well, currently I've just started a podcast, Introcast, Into the Village. It is an introcast to the television show The Prisoner. We just released our first episode. We're going to record our second episode later this weekend. And that can be found at www.facebook.com/prisonerintrocast. Where it will have the links to both the first episode and the spoiler group, which I'm not a part of.
And you can also find it on the web at, I believe it's...
theprisonerintrocast.podbean.com is what the first one.
I couldn't remember. If you see a big white bubble, you're at the right place. All right. And Amber, where can people find you on the internet?
So I'm pretty much everywhere. You can find me on Twitter at ARB_123. You can find me on Instagram at Mixtape Musings. And my wife and I killed our last podcast. We let it go to rest. But we are starting a new podcast. We're big TV buffs. and we decided that's our favorite thing to talk about. So we're just going to start an all-around TV review podcast coming early next year. We're still in the name phase, but if you follow me on Twitter and Instagram, we'll post more when it happens.
And what about if they want to buy the your album?
Oh, yeah. So I sing for a rock band here on Long Island called Wishlist. And you can find Wishlist on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and YouTube at Wishlist Rocks. And our album right now is only physical, but we're putting it up on Bandcamp in like a week or two. And it'll be free for download.
Yay. All right. Yeah. And Mildred?
Hi, I'm Mildred Cady. I'm on Twitter as MG Cady. That's C-A-D-Y. Also, some of my writing is over at the Metamore City podcast. And also, I've got, you have to like search through the archives, but I've done some work for Nobilis Reed at Nobilis Erotica. And there's a upcoming podcast called the Picnic Basket Podcast, a discussion about creativity and food and how they relate or don't relate. And yeah, I'm still working on that.
We'll get you there. We'll get you there. Yeah. And Rosie, where can everybody find you and your lovely voice?
The only place I've been on the Red Dwarf intro cast several times recently. My podcast Aboard the Night Bus, which is the Harry Potter chapter by chapter read through, is currently down. Yes. But we're bringing it back in the new year with new hosts. So hopefully yeah, get that up and running. And also we've done a couple of episodes of a podcast called Know This, which is just general geek chat. So we've just done a general one, and we've done one on Doctor Who, and we've got several more to come out of that. One on video games, one that we recorded on The Thin Man. So yeah. That's it, really.
And if they want to stay in touch so that they can find out what's going on with Aboard the Night Bus when you do relaunch it, they can just find you on Facebook. There is a group for Aboard the Night Bus. Just search for Aboard the Night Bus.
Yeah, with Aboard a K. The Night Bus.
And thank you, everyone, for joining me. Thank you, everyone. Bye.
Thank you.
Bye.
Bye.
Detective Kate Beckett, NYPD.
Richard Castle, just NY.
I'm Heidi.
And I'm John.
Where were you between 9 and 10 last night?
Recording CastleCast.
A podcast for ABC's Castle.
We cover all the latest Castle news.
And we recap and discuss the latest Castle episode.
Then we find out what our listeners have to say.
And there are spoilers.
I think we're done here.
Don't leave town.
Nelly Bites is produced by Nimlas Studios. You can find us at nimlas.org/blog. Contact feedback at nuttybites@nimlas.org. Call our voicemail line at 347-NUTTY-42 or 347-688-8942. This work is licensed under a Creative Commons Attribution Non-Commercial No Derivatives 3.0 Unported License. Basically, you can share it, you can send it around to your friends, just don't change it, don't sell it, don't try to make any money off of it, and link back to me, my site, and everything.